Before we get into today's podcast, I want to offer you a powerful free resource. We often hear from listeners looking for answers to those who claim God cannot exist for a variety of scientific reasons. But science actually supports the existence of God, which is why I want to offer you a free download called God's Not Dead. It explores scientifically how our own cosmos points to a creator in three clear areas. Again, this powerful resource is yours absolutely free, so why not download God's Not Dead for free right now at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, here's today's podcast.
Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Matters of Life and Death. As always, I'm Tim Wyatt and I'm joined by my dad, John Wyatt. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Tim. Good to be here.
And we're very pleased to say we've got a guest on the show again today. That's Richard Cheetham. Hi, Richard.
Hiya. Good to be here.
Would you mind introducing yourself for those who haven't come across you? Who are you and what do you do, or what did you do?
My name is Richard Cheetham. I have had a long interest in the science and religion interface, and I've recently finished about 18 months ago as the Bishop of Kingston in the Diocese of Southwark, which covers most of South London for the Anglican Church. And I'm a co-director of a very exciting initiative called Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science.
Fantastic. Well, we're really pleased to have you on the show. I think possibly the first former bishop we've ever had, Dad. So we're going up the ranks, up the ecclesiastical ranks,
yeah,
which is
great.
Yeah,
we better watch our P's and Q's, you know.
Well, I do have to say, I'm actually still a bishop. I'm an assistant bishop.
Once a bishop, always a bishop, isn't it?
Indeed, and also an assistant bishop in the Diocese of Southwark. So that continues, but not quite in the same way as when I was Bishop of Kingston.
We've got you on the show today, Richard, to talk a little bit first off about that project you mentioned, Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science, which is a bit of a mouthful. So I think we'll probably call it ECLAS from now on, if that's all right. Could you just explain a little bit about where this whole project came from and what does it involve and what's your role there?
Well, it began over 10 years ago now. And the two main driving forces behind it were Reverend Professor David Wilkinson, who was then principal of St John's College in Durham University, and Professor Tom McLeish, who was a very eminent scientist, also then at Durham University. And the two of them in their conversations were concerned about the way in which senior Christian leaders in particular, and the church more generally, engaged with major issues of science. And this is partly because science is so fundamental in our lives today. Even if you don't think you've got a scientific bone in your body, your life will have been deeply affected by modern science, and also some of the ways in which you see the world and how you understand the world. So the relationship between Christian faith and science and all that it gives us is an extremely important one to get right. So that's where it began in Durham University a bit over 10 years ago. And I got involved very early on. And I can tell you a little bit about what drew me in, if that would be of interest.
I mean, what do you have your own scientific background before you were a bishop?
Yes, as a teenager, I started going to an evangelical Anglican church as a teenager. And I was also at school specialising more and more in science, in physics and maths in particular. So an obvious question for me at that stage of my life was, how does my Christian faith relate to all this understanding of the world, which science, I'm learning about in science, which is so powerful and has so much to say? And that's been something which has stayed with me all through. And my first degree was at Oxford University, and I went to study physics and philosophy. And part of the reason for doing that was to not only do the physics and the science, but also understand a bit more about how science works and why it gives us so much. And of course, for me, there was also the interest about the overlap with theology and our understanding of God. So that stayed with me all through my, I began my working life as a physics teacher and taught in secondary schools in England for 5 years, and then went into the Church of England's ordained ministry, and eventually ended up as for doing 20 years as Bishop of Kingston in South London. And a bit over 10 years ago, I had some sabbatical leave, and I went to Berkeley in California in the United States to the Church Divinity School of the Pacific. And my intention when I went was to get myself a bit more up to date with the science and religion scholarship and interchange. And there was a very good place called the Center for Theology and Natural Science there, which Professor Bob Russell runs. And I learned a lot from it. But what I came back with was not quite what I expected. And it was this. I learned that there's a mountain of really good scholarship giving very deep understandings of the relationship between Christian faith and science. And the challenge for someone like me in my role as a bishop in the church was not to add a little pebble somewhere to that mountain of scholarship, but how do we get all of this really good material much more widely spread in the churches so that there's a much deeper understanding and better understanding throughout the church at every level. And it was seemed to me that was the challenge for me. And ECLAS, Equipping Christian Leadership in an Age of Science, was just beginning at that stage, and it was the perfect vehicle to do just that wider engagement.
It's interesting for me to hear you speak, Richard, because in some ways I had quite a similar experience going to university to read physics, and also feeling this kind of dislocation between, you know, the world of Christianity in which I've been brought up, and then all this wonderful new physics. And so for me, at the time, it created quite a life crisis for me in a way. I was desperate to become a scientist. This was all very attractive, and did it mean having to give up my Christian commitments? I mean, did you feel some of the same? Or was it always obvious how the two fitted together?
It's certainly not obvious how the two fit together, because both of them, both science and Christian faith, in their different ways, I think, seek the truth about the deepest realities of our lives and our existence in this extraordinary cosmos in which we live. And there are certain similarities because of that. They are both truth-seeking activities, but there does seem to be a very widespread view that science and Christian faith and belief are somehow in conflict with one another. And that if you're a good scientist following all the tenets of reason and experiment, and you've got to prove everything, that doesn't really mix very well with belief in God, which some people view as, well, that's your private opinion. There's no real evidence for that. You can't really get any. And if you're a good scientist, where's the evidence for God? Now, I think that's a caricature both of science and also of theology and Christian belief. And it's really important to unpick those caricatures if you're going to have a good understanding of how the two interact. Because when that happens, and we've found this time and time again in our ECLAS activities, when the two get into a really good relationship, you have very, very fruitful and interesting conversations.
And did you find, were there particular scientists or people who you saw who managed to combine the two and live a kind of integrated intellectual approach. Were there individuals who influenced you on that journey?
There are. One of the very early books which I read as a student at Oxford was by Professor Coulson, who was a Methodist and also a professor of applied maths in Oxford. And he wrote a book that was actually published in 1955 called Science and Christian Belief. And he was saying in that you need a sort of, if you like, a kind of three-dimensional approach to reality. So you don't just look through a science lens, and you don't simply just look through a Christian theology lens, but you make some attempt to have a conversation between them. And when you do that, what happens is you get a deeper understanding of both. It's not that one knocks the other out, as in a straightforward conflict narrative, but you get a much deeper and much more nuanced understanding. So certainly that book by Professor Coulson very early on. Much more recently, I've had the great pleasure of working alongside Professor Tom McLeish in the ECLES project, who very sadly died last year. And he's been inspirational, I think, in some of his thinking and books, and has written a very good book called Faith and Wisdom in Science, which is one of his approaches. But, and again, talking about the importance of this interdisciplinary approach and conversation, and how there is real creativity in science. It's not just a dry, logical, oh yes, I go out there with my experiment and I get a few facts and then I come up with a theory that I can prove by all this. It's a much more creative process, the process of science.
And when you're speaking with scientists who aren't believers, you know, a lot of the presumption in popular culture would be that, you know, non-Christian scientists would be dismissive and kind of completely kind of almost sneering at the idea that you believe in this God thing. But is that actually true? Does that caricature also fall apart when you actually test it on real life scientists?
It absolutely falls apart. Of course, there are some very high profile scientists who very much don't believe in God and are very active in saying that they think it's a lot of nonsense. So we've had all the phenomenon of the new atheist movement with Professor Richard Dawkins and so forth. I mean, obviously a very good scientist, but very clear that in his view that science and religion don't go together. But certainly my experience has been that with the many, many, very often world-leading scientists that we've engaged with through the ECLES project and some of our conferences, which have been with major, very, very good scientists and senior church leaders, I think many of those scientists who, some of them will have a religious background, some absolutely not. But what they are ready to do and engage with is the fact that they are aware that the science they are developing, so this could be cosmology, it could be artificial intelligence, all sorts of different areas, has far more implications than just the science itself. These areas are surrounded by lots of ethical questions, and they indeed make us ask different kinds of what might be called spiritual questions as well. So there's a real openness to that wider type of conversation that puts the scientific enterprise into a much broader context of human life. And we've had very, very good conversations as a result of that. So I think that caricature thing where it's all just a ding-dong and a kind of boxing match type of thing is actually a minority now. And my own view is that the new atheist movement, I think, has passed its high watermark now. And that's partly because some of the developments in science going on.
I agree with that. I mean, certainly that's been my experience too with having discussions with scientists. One of the strange paradoxes is it's often the people at the top of the field who are more open to engage in this kind of discussion and, you know, genuinely interested in dialogue. And it's often the kind of junior hotheads, I think, who or the people who are just very polemical. And I do know quite a lot of senior scientists who have been rather embarrassed by people like Richard Dawkins, who felt, you know, his arguments and were just simplistic and naive, and they really couldn't support it, and that he wasn't actually helping the atheist cause.
But I found it relatively easy to, if you like, create common ground. I mean, I think Richard Dawkins himself is very, very, has written many things on the importance of awe and wonder in science, and that sense of here I am in this vast universe. Now, that's very close to some of the Christian sense of the worship of God and God's creation. And if you get into those areas of awe and wonder, again, you find a lot more overlap, because that's common experience which everyone has. And then you can go out from that. And some people will say, well, that's nothing to do with an understanding of God. But there'll be others who'll be more open to, well, is it a bit deeper than just the material world that we now see? I can remember as a teenager, when I was engaging with this stuff early on, and when you think, as you do as a teenager, sometimes life, the universe and everything, what's it all about? I remember thinking, you've either got to be a thoroughgoing materialist. In other words, all there is stuff. There's matter, atoms and molecules and all that kind of thing. And we are very complicated arrangements of all that lot. But in the end, that's all there is. So there is no ultimate meaning to life other than what we create and all that sort of thing. And if you don't think that's quite right, you've got to be some kind of theist. There's a deeper reality. We use the word God to point to the ultimate reality, a deeper reality behind this extraordinary world that we inhabit. And in very much, I still think you've either got to pitch one way or the other on those things. And obviously, I think a theistic interpretation has much more depth and richness to it.
And so could you tell us, what exactly does ECCLAS try and do then? Is it simply about kind of symposiums of bigwigs, bishops and top scientists getting together and chewing the fat? Or how does it filter down to the rest of the church?
Great question. There's five different strands to the work of ECCLAS. And underlying them all is working at the importance of a deep culture change within the church in its approach to science, religion, matters, to get these things much more centre stage and also much more confident in dealing with those matters, seeing science as God's gift, good gift to us, to explore creation. There are many, many fine Christians who are scientists. So it's science as gift and the importance of developing what we tend to call sometimes science-engaged theology. So in other words, our theology really does look at what science tells us about the world and tries to engage with those deep questions. So that's the broad thrust. It's about getting these things embedded within the life of the church. So there are five different strands to what the work of ECCLAS does. The first of them, and these are in no particular order of priority because they all interweave with one another and feed one another. So the first one is some original research into attitudes of senior church leaders. And we've had some excellent researchers, and you'll find quite a lot of that material is on the ECCLAS website, which is www.ecclasproject.org. So there's the research into attitudes, and we've had some fascinating material from all of that. Then there are some conferences deliberately aimed at senior church leaders, where we've had in England, and we've had mostly bishops, cathedral deans, other senior church leaders from different denominations. It's very much an ecumenical venture, ECCLAS. So those senior church leaders conferences, which have basically involved excellent scientists in their field presenting their work and engaging with those senior church leaders. So those conferences have been very fruitful. We've also got a strand, and this is where it gets down to the congregational level, called Scientists in Congregations, where we give out grants up to, it's quite a decent chunk of money you can apply for if you've got a good project locally, and it's up to about £10,000. And we've had a large number of very good and very interesting projects done by local churches. And the basic idea is you have a minister who's concerned and also a scientist who is involved in the congregation in some way. They come up with a project. I'll say a bit more about that in more detail later. So the Scientists in Congregations has been really important for the grassroots, and it's thrown up all sorts of creativity, creative ideas. Then the two remaining strands, one is called Science for Seminaries, which is about getting really good material on science-engaged theology, not just as an optional course on the side for people going through training for ministry, but embedded in their biblical study, in their theology, in their the way they do their worship, and all of those things to get it embedded. And we've given out quite substantial grants to a wide number of church ministerial training courses and seminaries in the country. And that's been, again, very, very fruitful. And then the last strand of ECLAS has been to help particularly senior church leaders in their public policy statements. So on contentious and complicated things like artificial intelligence or fracking would be another example, having good material to help some of those more public statement and public policy type of interventions, which sometimes senior church leaders get called upon to do. So that fivefold pattern tries to bring about this deep culture change in the churches to make these things much more central.
So it's obviously a very noble and commendable effort. Is it too early to say how successful do you think this kind of approach is going? It feels as though there must be quite a lot of resistance, or kind of inertia, and I suppose trying to work out where the inertia is. I mean, in terms of the agenda, there seem to be so many other things which seem to be higher up at the moment, aren't there? Like, you know, the controversy going on about a gay marriage and their prayers of blessing for people, and other kind of challenges within the Church of England and broader in the institutional church. It feels at the moment as though science is pretty low down on the agenda. Is that fair? And if so, how might that change?
It's certainly fair in that there are immense pressures on senior church leaders, pulling them in all sorts of different directions. And you've mentioned just two of them. And of course, in a UK context and also a European context and also a North American context as well, to a lesser extent, there are real concerns about the diminishing number of people who are actively engaged with our churches and how we respond to all of that. And so there's a lot of thinking about, well, how do we do mission in those sorts of contexts? Now, my own view is that if you engage with some of these science-related questions, it gets you into territory which actually helps with that mission. It might not seem so obvious right at the beginning, but to give an example, there's quite a lot of evidence to show that young people in the UK are imbibing either from wider culture or partly through education, because there's relatively little on the history of science or philosophy of science, they imbibe a kind of conflict narrative of science and religion. So if you're interested in mission and evangelism, you're not even on the starting blocks if you've got that hurdle to overcome. So one of the things we've found is that when you do engage with some of this stuff seriously, it actually genuinely helps the wider mission of the church. It helps you to engage much more broadly with the context in which we're set, and I think opens the door to very interesting conversations. So all those things are batting in on church leaders, and one of the challenges certainly is to create enough time and space and really good material and events that help senior church leaders. Oh yeah, if we get involved in this stuff, it really does have an impact. And that's partly why we're putting quite a lot of energy, for example, into the Science for Seminaries program, because that's is formative of a generation of ministerial leaders who do realize that today's generation, they are concerned about climate change in the environment, about the impact of artificial intelligence, about the impact of healthcare and vaccines, about the impact of agriculture and our food systems around the world, and all of those things. And Christian faith has a lot to say in terms of how we approach those things. So although there are certainly quite a lot of hurdles, I think they're ones which we absolutely ought to tackle and engage with for the sake of the mission of God's church across the world.
I imagine most people listening to this, when they think back to the kind of things that their minister, their pastor, their vicar might have been preaching on, what their church has been teaching on over the last year, you know, it'll be predominantly, I suspect, you know, teaching through books of the Bible and other kind of issues in theology. There might be a little smattering of kind of social engagement, but I would suspect most of them can't remember the last time, you know, the sermon talked about a scientific topic explicitly. Is that a problem? Do you think that's a failure of our kind of imagination as Christian leaders, not to see science as an issue to be taught
I think it is a problem and a challenge, more importantly, to develop. There's loads of material in the Bible where if you go to it, there is a great sense of wonder of creation, exploration of creation. Some of the Psalms talk about all creation singing God's praises. There's some wonderful material in the book of Job, for example. And I think, certainly my experience has been, if we engage with some of that biblical material alongside some of what modern science tells us about the world, what it does is it challenges your theological thinking and you go to a deeper level, and I think a richer level. And one of the talks that I've sometimes given talks about a bigger understanding of the gospel. J.B. Phillips, the Bible translator, famously wrote a book called Your Gospel is Too Small, which was a result of when he translated the scriptures. As he got deeper and deeper into it, he found his understanding of God simply grew and grew. Now, sometimes people talk also about the book of nature, exploring God's creation, God's gift to us through our science. And certainly my experience has been that if you bring all those two together, you get a much richer understanding of the enormity of God's love and ideas of what salvation might mean. And just to give a little example, in our Christian faith, we talk about the end times, the end of the world and all those sorts of things. Where's it all going? And understandings about the so-called second coming of Christ and ultimate things, if you like. Now, in cosmology, there are all sorts of things about, well, where's the universe going? And if you put those two things into conversation with each other, you end up with some quite interesting conversations. And that's just one example. If you take another example, our understanding of evolution, and how does that affect how we see the story of the fall, for example, in the book of Genesis, our understanding of sin and its place in the world. And if you start engaging with these questions, I think it gets you to a deeper understanding of God's love, and the biblical material then comes alive more for people.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're both very much on the same page, and that's been my experience as well. But, you know, one of the things which I've said this before, but I do find it completely mystifying. And that is, if you go onto Discovery Channel or BBC, Planet Earth or Nature documentaries or whatever, you will find a complete sort of panoply of documentaries which are all expressing this kind of sense of awe and wonder and mystery and beauty of the cosmos, of the microscopic, of wonderful sort of ecological phenomena, and so on and so on. So, produced by people, many of whom are atheists, or at least, you know, they believe in nature with a capital N, but they're not at all sure. And then you go into the institutional church and you go to a worship service, and these are people who actually believe in a creator God. They actually believe that there was a God who made the cosmos. And there's none of that. I'm afraid so often, you know, this sense of, you know, this wonder of the creation, of the beauty of everything, of the intricacy of the, it's kind of missing. Instead, we get a sermon about sin and the evil and God having a rescue operation. It mystifies me why there's more wonder and awe in creation outside the church than there is within it.
Yes, and of course we need to remember many of the most famous scientists in history and many today were, of course, deeply devout Christians from saw themselves as exploring the wonder of God's creation, using their God-given brains wonders of God's creation.
Yeah, what went wrong? Where did it go? How did it go wrong? And how did we end up with a kind of Christian establishment that, for good or ill, has by and large lost that sense of belief and wonder in any real vibrant way?
I think some of it you can trace the roots into the 19th century with the establishment of professional science, which is sort of as we begin to know it now, and that developing all through that period, where I think there became a bit of a bifurcation between the science professionals. And if you go back before that, there was a much more natural interdisciplinary approach to things. And the phrase natural philosophy was used, and the term science was actually coined only in the 19th century in terms of modern science. So I think that loss of the interdisciplinary approach to things has stayed with us. And of course, as science has developed, it's become more and more complex, and many, many sort of subspecialisms in different strands of science. And I actually think now one of the things that's going on, because of some of the developments, like, for example, our understanding of dark energy and dark matter, we realize there are vast things we simply don't understand about the universe. So if you like, there's more of a humility in science, I think, to be open to wider understandings. And I think within the Christian church, one of the things that sometimes can narrow the thing down is when all the focus goes on to what this Christian stuff is really about, is about the individual's relationship with God. That's the only thing that really matters, that someone comes to faith and that's the end of the story. Now, my understanding of salvation and God's love is much more rounded than that. Of course, the individual's relationship with God matters, but God's love is for all creation. Christ's salvation is for, the Bible talks about all things being reconciled in Christ. It's an extraordinary cosmic vision, which you find, for example, in the beginning of the letter to the Colossians, or you don't have to look very far in the New Testament to find those very early Christian theologians developing this much broader understanding. And I think today, when we're so aware of planet Earth, our place in it, this deeper this holistic understanding of Christian faith is really important. And I actually think it really, if we're going to speak to the world which we now live in, it absolutely needs that more holistic approach to our understanding of Christian faith, which I think is deeply, deeply biblical.
Did you know that this month marks the fourth anniversary of Premier Insight, the ministry that brings you this podcast? While it's a real season of celebration, there's also a very real financial challenge that must be met this month. Due to rising costs and the pressure of inflation, there's a $35,000 gap that must be closed this month to keep Premier Insight moving forward with strength. So that's why I'm asking you to give a special anniversary gift to keep programs like this podcast on the air and equip a generation of Christians to live out their faith with clarity, conviction, and confidence. Simply go to premierinsight.org/matters of life and death. That's premierinsight.org/matters of life and death. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
Do you feel sometimes then as a Christian from a science background, as a Christian kind of captured by that vision, a bit like a fish out of water? You know, have abundantly your experience, particularly as a bishop in the Church of England, is it quite a kind of humanities focused kind of word and paper discipline now? Although are there people actually who could speak this language of science?
There is growing awareness and understanding. That's certainly been the experience of the ECLAS project. I think through its time, it's become much deeper embedded in the life, not just of the Church of England, but many different churches across England. But also one really important development which we've had, the current phase of ECLAS has been a hugely exciting development. And we now work with four partner institutions in different parts of the world. One in Kenya, St. Paul's University in Limuru. One in Singapore, the Singapore Bible College. One in Poland, the Nicholas Copernicus University. And one in India, the United Theological College in Bengaluru. And part of that is to look at how these questions play out in very different contexts around the world. And the rather limited sometimes context of a UK context, which is deeply affected by secularism, can produce a rather sterile type of conversation, which quickly lapses into the conflict stuff. When you ask, okay, how do these questions look from a Kenyan perspective or an Indian perspective or a Southeast Asian perspective? You get very different approaches. And one of the really exciting things about the way in which the ECLAS project is now developing is that it's beginning to produce material where different insights from different cultural contexts are beginning to give different new angles on how you think about these things. From contexts, for example, such as in Kenya, where belief in God is much more deeply embedded in the wider culture. So I think that's going to be a hugely productive part of the ECLAS project. And that's reinforced at the last Lambeth Conference, which is the roughly 10-yearly gathering of all the Anglican bishops around the world. The last one took place a couple of years ago, and which I was present, and the bishops there supported a thing called the Lambeth Call on Science, which was encouraging churches around the world to absolutely engage with the interface of science and Christian faith. And the Anglican Communion set up a thing called the Anglican Communion Science Commission, of which I'm a member, which has some very eminent scientists from around the world and a number of senior church leaders around the world. And that's a project that'll last at least up till the next Lambeth Conference. So there's real energy to engage with these issues, not just in this country, but around the world. I think they're going to become richer and richer conversations as those intercultural conversations begin to happen. We'll find new ways of thinking opening up.
Sounds fascinating, and I'm sure the intercultural conversations, you know, that is a really important part. Can I just go slightly off at another direction, and that is, my impression is that the sort of pure science and Christianity interface is something which is very well worked over. As you said, there are hundreds of people who have been working in this area, wonderful resources, looking at astronomy, cosmology, pure science, and so on. And yet, the reality of most science that is going on in universities and elsewhere across the world is much more techno-science. It's really, you know, where is the action today? It isn't mainly in astronomy and in, you know, the Large Hadron Collider and so on. I mean, really where things are changing at an extraordinary pace are things like AI, computer technology, engineering, you know, green technology, human enhancement, genetic editing. In other words, all of these things are really, it's technology much more than pure science. And my strong impression is that Christian engagement in technology, Christian thinking about technology, is much less developed and much less, there's much less resources are going into how to engage with this extraordinary explosion we're seeing in technological progress more than the pure science. Do you agree with that? Do you think there's something in that?
I think that's probably true. I mean, I think the all the material you referred to earlier on in terms of the cosmology and all those sorts of things, there's loads of it around. What it does need, I think, is getting embedding some of that within science curricula in schools so that there's a much broader understanding of the nature of science and what science can and can't tell you about reality and the interaction. But on those more technical things, yeah, we are living in an extraordinary age of very, very rapid technical development. And that's why I think it's even more important to have the science engage theology, or you might say technology engage theology, because the consequences of some of these things are so powerful that if you don't have that ethical and spiritual and theological framework to guide you in how to use them. And to use a simple example, I've tended to think that ever since the first Stone Age axe was produced, and you get a useful sharp edge on your stone, well, you've done a bit of technology and developed something. Now you can use it for chopping up your meat and things like that. You can also use it to kill someone. And some of the technology itself is immensely powerful, but you do need that wider framework of how are we meant to live as human beings? What's the purpose of it? How are we meant to relate to each other? How are we meant to relate to our environment? How are we meant to relate to God in Christian understanding that will help us to work out how to use these things in the best possible way? And if you don't have that input, you're in very dangerous territory because then, as you know, stuff can be used in dreadful ways.
Yes, and it is interesting to me because in a way, when you're dealing with the kind of pure science, you know, that we've talked about before, it still stays in a kind of almost Platonic kind of realm, doesn't it? You know, what's the relationship between God the mathematician and God the creator and the nature of reality and the laws of physics and all this kind of stuff. Once you get into technology, technology is about power. It's about mastery. It's about control. It's about making things happen. And then you're immediately into murky stuff about politics, about human nature, about who controls this. And also you get the divide between the right and the left, you know, in political terms. And it all just becomes very murky. And it then seems that often the Christian contribution gets rather lost or not lost, but it's less clear, you know, what has Christianity got to say about large language models and what's happening in Silicon Valley at the moment, and so on. You know, this is much murkier, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely up there for the engagement. And just to take another example on climate and environment matters, one of the biggest challenges facing us in the world today, and it really does matter how we respond to that. If you think of the impact of Pope Francis' encyclical Laudato Si a few years ago, that gave a very substantial piece of input into, we've got all this science here that tells us a lot about what's happening in our world, but that put it into a wider framework of how we ought to be living and into how we understand our relationship with creation and our moral duties involved in that and our spiritual duties in that. I think Pope Francis talked about the importance of ecological conversion in that. So that was a major, major piece of input, which was rooted in and knew a lot of the very good science, and there were some very good scientists but it put it in the broader context of a deep Christian understanding of the nature of the world. Now, I think one of the things we need now, absolutely, is similar big scale thinking. And to take, for example, artificial intelligence as an example, there's a lot of very good thinking going on around that. That particular issue very, very quickly gets you to the question of what does it mean to be human? Now, our Christian faith tells us we are made in the image of God. Now, how does that begin to shape what you then think you can and can't do, what you should and shouldn't be doing with developments in artificial intelligence? And we need far more, and that's not the only area. There are lots of other areas. Genetics would be another example of where you need that big input. And that's why it's so important to encourage a generation of thinkers, as the Science for Seminaries programme is doing, who've got those things embedded, those big questions embedded in their theology and their biblical studies, and have got the, if you like, the tools to do the job so that things don't go too far apart.
What if you're a church leader listening to this who's kind of, you know, sold, who's persuaded that the case you've made that, you know, we do need to engage more thoughtfully and creatively with science as Christian leaders, but, you know, it's too late for them. They've already done their seminary training and they're a bit at sea, you know, that they might have got a, you know, humanities degree and a theology doctorate or a master's program, and they've spent their whole career thus far, you know, learning how to teach the Bible and deliver a small group rota and do personal evangelism, and suddenly they're being told you need to get up to speed with large language models and how to engage on the latest research in cosmology. They might understandably feel a little bit like, hang on, this is not what I signed up for. Even if I think this is a good thing to do, how on earth do I find the time?
I get that entirely. And my basic view is that even if you don't think you've got a scientific bone in your body, and you were the sort of person who gave up science as soon as you possibly could at school, the kind of questions which these things raise, you actually can get your head round without an incredibly detailed technical knowledge. You don't need two PhDs to work these things out. And there is really good material now around. And if listeners want to go to the ECLAS website, they'll find a lot of it on that. There are many other places where you can also get very good material that help you to get your head round really quite quickly some of the basic questions and theological challenges, the mission challenges, the ethical challenges of some of these developments in science. And you don't have to do it all yourself. As a church leader, you are in a position where you can encourage lots of good things to happen. And that's where, for example, the Scientists in Congregations project is very good, because that's been extraordinarily fruitful. And if you look at the range of projects that have come up from that, people in our churches are thinking about these things. They do think about these questions. If you bother to go and ask them, they do think about these things. And given a bit of money to come up with an exciting way of thinking about it, it produces all sorts of things. I mean, we had one church, they did a Take Your Vicar to the Lab because they had some very significant laboratories nearby, and that was one example. We had one of another one that was doing a lot on marine life and the importance of the oceans, and this was a coastal context where that was happening. There's been a lot of material helping the schools. So there's lots and lots of things around and material around. You don't have to, you're not producing it from scratch.
And you may already have in your, sitting in your pew in your church sanctuary every Sunday, a scientist who's doing this on the Monday to Friday and would love to kind of integrate their study.
That's a really, really important thing to bring out, because one of the things, it's about the vocations of scientists. And within our churches, there'll be many, many people who work in science. Get them to come and talk about what they're doing on Monday to Friday and the issues that they see, and value that within the life of the church and get those kind of conversations going. There's one very good little strand, it's called This Time Tomorrow, and they get different people. Get a bit more of that going in a local church and use all that sort of resource can be hugely helpful. And one other thing which is probably worth mentioning, the ICLAS team have just produced a lot of material called New Narratives in Science and Religion, and it's deliberately designed for churches to fit in with the liturgical year, so that you've got material when you're preparing your sermon and you want a few bright ideas about how to include stuff, you'll find some ideas that might spark you off on that. And again, that can be found on the website. In summary, I think where churches manage to get this engagement, and there's lots of material to help them to do that, I think what will happen is our ability to connect with the world that we serve will grow and grow and grow. Also, our faith, our Christian faith, will grow deeper as a result of doing those. There'll be some challenging questions en route, but actually it makes you think, well, what do I really believe about this and that? And it makes that faith go deeper. So I think this is and it's a hugely exciting time, talking to our partners overseas as well. This is rippling around the world. It's happening, you know, pretty much everywhere in a different kind of way, slightly different types of questions, slightly. But there's a real desire to engage in this. And I think there's a lot that will, I think, help both Christian people and the wider world to a much deeper understanding of God's creation and our part in it.
I'm very much a non-scientist. I have to confess I dropped all my science subjects at 16 as soon as I could, and very much a words person. But I have to be honest, it feels like we live in a kind of intensely scientific age. It feels like every day the news is full of breakthroughs. And as you were talking, I was really reminded of an episode we did on this podcast a few years ago with Andrew Davison, who's a Christian theologian, but very interested in cosmology. And he was talking about astrobiology and this discussion of, you know, what if we find intelligent alien life in the universe, which sounds like an incredibly scientific question. But as we talked, we realized it made us as believers, as human believers, have to think again about Christology, the person of Jesus and the incarnation, and our understanding of humanity and our anthropology, and all these completely human theological questions that were brought up by having to wrestle with cutting edge science.
Absolutely. And I think in 1995, there'd been one so-called exoplanet discovered. In other words, the kind of place where life might be possible in the universe. Now there are over 5,000 identified. So it's a real live issue about the possibility of life in different parts of the universe. Now, you've got to think, okay, how does that affect my understanding of the significance of Jesus' death and resurrection for the salvation, not just of me as an individual, but of the globe, of the cosmos? It challenges you to think much more deeply. And these are live questions. And if you go into the realm of science fiction, for example, if you're into science fiction, lots of these big questions are thought about in science fiction in different ways. Now, Christians need to get into those because we've got something to say, rooted in our biblical understandings, rooted in our creeds and our theological understanding. We need to be part of that conversation, absolutely. but doing it in a way that's accessible to people.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because there is a very surprising connection between the search for extraterrestrial life and how one might treat an intelligent alien who suddenly appears in your midst.
Yeah.
And artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And how you might treat an intelligent alien machine that suddenly appears in your midst. Yeah. And so, these both those kind of developments force you to kind of think again about many of the received things that we have taken for granted. And it is an extraordinary time to be alive. And there's no doubt that these issues are vastly important. I'm just frustrated, I think, that so often it seems that Christians get preoccupied by other issues which seem to diminish, or we lose this sense of the big picture and the big questions and the reasons we're placed here as God's representatives.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just to go back to J.B. Filcher, I think one of the ways of summarising all that is his the title of his book that he wrote after his Translating the Bible experience was Your God is Too Small. I think if you don't engage with these big questions, you could equally say your gospel is too small. And the gospel, it grows in depth and richness and profundity when you do engage with these things properly. They might seem like slightly fanciful questions, like would you baptize a robot or something of that sort, but they force you to think about how you really do understand your Christian faith. You can't get away with waffle, and it expands your horizons in this engagement. So I think we live at a hugely interesting time, hugely challenging time, and I would encourage everyone wherever they are as listeners to engage with the resources that are there, some of them on the ECLAS Project website and plenty of other places where you can get good material. Get into that and you'll find it's an exciting journey. It'll deepen your faith and it'll deepen your engagement with the world in which we are set and called to serve.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. It's been a really interesting conversation. We're really grateful to have you on the show. Thanks for sharing about ECLAS. We'll put a link to that project and their website in the show notes if you want to follow through and see some of those resources and some of the other things that the team there have been up to. But thanks, everyone else, for listening and going on this journey with us. I hope you found it interesting. Please don't forget that you can always get in touch with us if you've got any questions or feedback or comments. You can email MOLAD, MOLAD. At premier.org.uk, and there's lots on Dad's website, johnwyatt.com, other interesting resources to stimulate your own thinking, so do check those out as well. But otherwise, we'll be back with another episode next week, and until then, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.